We believe that alcoholism is a disease and that Alcoholics Anonymous is one solution to that disease. I'm here to bring you the voices of its members. Everyone that comes on the show, including myself, is an active member and has found recovery in the rooms of AA. As you listen, please take what works for you and leave the rest.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tang H, and I am an alcoholic. Sobriety date, June 25th, 2011. And this sobriety date is very special to me. And I always start out by saying that in my disease, I always forgot my mom's birthday, belly button birthday. And for some magical reason, I cared not or dared not guess or whatever that my sobriety date landed on my mom's belly button birthday. She's gone now, right? So this day is very important to me. I get to celebrate my new AA life with my group, whoever, and I honor my mom's birthday for what she's done for me. Anyways, I'm here to tell you my story. I was born in Vietnam, 1971, and my parents had to leave the war, so we started a migration from Vietnam to China on a boat, which my dad paid. You know, he had his own like a small candy factory he made from the house and stuff, old school style, and then would distribute it to all the local business or to anyways. And I learned this after he passed, anyways, from my dad's older brother. So we left at 78 from China. And then from China to Hong Kong, and then Hong Kong, our family was sponsored from the Vietnamese Catholic Church, end up in Glendale, California, 1979. And growing up, first couple of years, the church helped us. My uncle, who helped sponsor us, he took care of us for the first couple of years. And then we had our own apartment. We're on welfare and stuff. And then a couple of years went by. My dad found a job at a restaurant in Chinatown, which was like half an hour away, so you would take the bus. Back then we didn't have a car. That went on and on, but back then a couple of times there was a park next to my house, so I would play with the kids and be literally 5-10-20 minutes late for dinner. My dad would take out his belt, Levi's belt, and whip me hard, kick me, and then send me to a corner. I'm crying on my knees, right, for like 45 minutes, and after I get to eat dinner. That was his way of showing me whatever, love, torture, whatever it might be. But later on, I'll get back to that story. But anyway, so it comes a point where my parents, my mom filed for divorce because I guess she realized that my dad and her were not really compatible for whatever reason. So I chose to live with my mom at a young age. I think I was like 12 or something. And then so my mom and I got an apartment and then do welfare and stuff. She started going to school, getting a job. And my mom is so fascinating in so many ways. She came to the United States, started night classes, ESL, took night classes, college, got like a, I don't know, like a simple job. And then before you know it, she graduated from Cal State LA in accounting. She's just truly remarkable for like a 5'2" nothing, you know, just so growing up without a father, right, pretty much. Then during that time, I still remember because my dad was like, come over my house and I would give you $100 for like the monthly child support. And a few times he would scold me, you know, whatever, berate me. I would run home, give my mom the $100 or the $200, I forget, and be crying, right? And then after a while, my mom said, you know, forget him. We don't need his money. So kind of detached, right? So I grew up with a single mom, eat at home, eat tons of rice. By eating a lot of rice, I didn't know, but became diabetic, but that's a different matter. Eating a lot of rice, eating tons of fast food. So I got pretty big for an Asian kid, right? So in junior high, I played a lot of sports and stuff. I was always a free spirit, I would say, right? Very curious about different cultures and stuff. So I was very like a social butterfly. I didn't really care about the skin color. I just want to have fun and just, I don't know, very Yeah, very innocent. So in so many ways, and so, but I was always had a knack for, I wasn't really into school at all, right? At all, I was into sports. That was good. And then I remember there was a time when Chinese New Year, right? Chinese New Year rolled around, and then at the Chinese festival, they had this game where you would throw a quarter on a plate, and the closer plates would get you $5, $10. The further one would get you 50, and the furthest one way out there get you 100. Well, this one year I went 1 year and didn't do well. So that whole year I practiced doing that. I came back and then won like a couple $100 throwing quarters on the plate because I practiced, right? So I had that, like, I don't know, very persistent, very stubborn, you know, I practice and I reap some of the rewards. Anyway, high school roll around. And all this time, I was pretty much a shy kid. I was afraid of girls. I would watch a lot of those Chinese operas, and God, I would cry and stuff when they... Anyways, high school rolls around, and then I'm playing football. I'm track and field, sophomore year. I'm doing well, right? And then the end of the track season, football season, I met this Korean guy. He's probably like tall, sleek, long hair, listened to Bon Jovi, smoked cigarettes. Had his own car, so I wanted what he had, right? So we started hanging out, ditching school, drinking Miller Lite, Budweiser. I was picking up cigarettes, listening to Bon Jovi. During the time, he had a cool, beautiful Korean girlfriend. And I was like, oh, my God. And during this time, I never even got close to different kind of girls, right? Because I was always into sports, hanging out with guys. So just to see that was... a game changer. And we started ditching class, drinking more beers. And then we went to a couple cake parties. And I remember we had paid $2-3 for admission fee, right? The host of the party, the parents were out of town, you know, in an affluent up in the hill in Glendale. Anyway, so I would be next to a cake, just getting drunk, just drinking, because the kids were smoking weed, whatever, hanging out, mingling. I was just next to the cake. And I remember after the thing would pass out, you know. So I remember early blackouts, you know. But I think back then it was just whatever's, right? It was a new experience, vomiting, whatever, new experience. So junior high, I was still playing football and stuff. But then my smoking got in the way. And then I faked a injury during a hell week during the summer when we have two-day practice for football with our gears on. And I was smoking so much that I couldn't hack it. So I faked a neck injury. And then I kind of left football, and then I started just doing my thing, playing a lot of pool, cutting class, and just drinking and smoking weed. That was the norm for me. They're my friends, and that was the norm. I barely graduated high school, barely. It was like a blur. So my drinking continued until after high school. I still party here, sleep in late. And then I started my little own fast tank carpet cleaning business, which I, and how I came about this, because I was working for this carpet cleaning company, and I would literally steal their customers, right? After I'm done hanging out business cards to neighbors, whatever. But I gave that up after a year because there were too many redos. Basically, we would put a paper on top of the carpets, and kids or dogs or whatever, I kind of come back and do it. So I said, forget this. Yeah. So, but that taught me a lot, right? And then by doing that, though, I knew that manual labor wasn't the way to go. That taught me a good lesson. So I kind of started focusing on pool. And then before you know, I started gambling at pool. By this time, I wasn't doing that much drinking. I was drinking here and there, but I was more into the pool. So that kind of, looking back, that probably saved my ass, because as I got better at pool with the hustling and stuff, I would go and still drink here and there, but still my passion was for pool. And then long story short, I became a professional pool player. But looking back, right, through my years of pool and stuff, I did well in a few regional tournaments and stuff, pretty big pool tournaments, where I would not drink, play pool, go to sleep, do all the right thing what a professional athlete is supposed to do. But yet for some reason, I have like, let's go Applebee's and have a couple beers. And this is like down to like the semifinals where the money's better, the title's at stake. But yes, somehow I would shoot myself in the foot. I got to remember all this through obviously coming to AA, doing inventory, right? And as the time, more sobriety time, the clarity, I could go back in time and I start to see the pattern. But anyways, I was doing that, right? I would go to Applebee's with my role partner for a nice dinner, celebrate whatever it is. And then I would drink, God, until 2 or 1 something, when we would get like a 12 pack, go back to the hotel, drink till like 4 or 5 in the morning. Then mind you, I got to play at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? So I would wake up hungover, didn't perform well, and I would lose. But yet, looking back, I was okay with that, right? It's almost like an excuse for me not to win the title. And I've done this like dozens of times, looking back, dozens. And, one thing about the alcohol, for me, it's so cunning for me because I am not a daily drinker. I don't drink every day, right? So I didn't associate myself as being a alcoholic. So 1998, I finished very high in the rankings, whatever, but I decided to change career to play poker because, I don't know, pool was not cutting the mustard financially. So I started playing poker. But mind you, the drinking got a little bit heavier now because with the poker, right, I'm a little bit older. I'm in my late 20s. So I'm starting hanging with people, a little more affluent people, for example, like bookies, hang out with business people and start drinking the heavier stuff, going to nightclubs. I don't want to put too much on my lifestyle, but I want to share what the progression of my drinking. This is my story. So it's, I started drinking more of the cognacs, the whiskeys and stuff. And then by this time, I started tapping into a little bit of the harder drugs, right? I don't want to give it too much power. And it was for a while there. Alcohol, it worked well for me for a while because I wouldn't drink and play poker all the time. But when I did, I would win anyways, just because maybe my opponent think that there's no way this guy could be making good decision when I'm watching this guy drink beer or whatever it is for like 10 straight hours, right? For some reason, I could hold my liquor. I don't know if it's the maybe because I'm using other substances to offset the alcohol in my system. I don't know. But I could literally play for days like that, right? And it worked for a while and it almost become like a habit, right? Obviously, it became like a habit. So, this went on for years. Bought a new car. Mind you, I still have my mom. It's just my mom and I, right? We went from apartment to... obviously, as a good son, I would give her the money. She was the manager, right? We would start moving up, better places. And then long story short, in a few years, save enough to buy her dream home. Anyway, so she was happy. Life was good. I was still drinking, going out clubbing, hanging out with the so-called friends, that were driving nice cars, all the name brand, just all this bullshit that I thought I had to have to fit in, to feel a part of, right? And then early 2000, when internet poker started coming on the scene, and then I did that, and then things were very well, very well, because it was like the new frontier and you get so many newbies trying online poker, right? So, and by this time I had some experience already, so I would be winning and stuff. And then I went to an after hour one day, I forget, it was like a Sunday or something. This so-called friend handed me some crushed up white stuff. Oh my God, I was so out of my mind. I was just like wire, right? Like at a different level. I went home and played literally for the next 3 days and won, right? And won, just won. And I was so alert. So this went on for like 2 years when I was like, work during the weekday and weekend. By Thursday, I would not play no poker and just literally party from Thursday to Sunday and have the had the funds to literally buy drinks, buy whatever, right? I was the party favor, you know, and I liked the attention. But anyways, probably the height of it, right? By me in being the state that I could almost feel like I could look through the screen, feel through the screen, and almost feel my opponent's tendency, because poker is all about tendencies and betting patterns, all that, right? And I could feel that, and I lived off that. And then obviously, I kept on doing it, and I started losing more. And by this time, I became a meth addict, just couldn't shake it. And my mom was smart enough to start really tying up the finances, right? Because she sees the money's not coming in, it's going out now. So she literally cut me off. But I wasn't done yet, because by this time I still had pretty good credit on the street. So I used that up slowly, right? Use it up, some borrowing money. I had no intention of giving back right now, because obviously I had no source of giving it back until the streets cut me off. And then I am literally busted, broke, living at home, still doing meth. But I wasn't doing anything about it, right? I was just content. And this went on for like literally a year, just me staying home and doing my whatever, you know, and then would drink some Jack and Diet Coke just to fall asleep. And then got worse where, you know what, I want to stop, but I couldn't. You know, I wake up with this foggy alcohol, like deep, you know, thinking about it now, I was so sick in so many ways. You know, it's like I signed a death sentence with the devil or the demons, or, you know, I couldn't shake it. During this time, my mom knew I had a problem already. And so whatever I would buy, I would use it one time and give it to her, and she would flush it down the toilet in like disgust, right? Tears coming down. I remember my mom telling me that after my 3-4 day binge at home, she would sit next to me, and I'm so fragile, so weak, and I'm all curled up, you know, like just like a lost little child. And she would cry, you know, and this went on for a while now. Went on for a while because obviously I'm not healthy enough to get a job, whatever. And mind you, before all this, right, when I was still coherent, being a pool player, I had a chance to do some television consulting work, right, where I literally sat around, gave a couple stars, some pool tips, shot a couple of shots, you know, show them some bridge, whatever. I got paid like literally $600 or $700 a day for sitting around doing like maybe an hour, 2 hours worth of work, had all the free food, hung out, and just, and then I did that, but I did that also while I wasn't drinking or drugging. Fast forward, I think it was like 2 years later or like a year later, the agency called me back. And this is when I was like on my binge, right? I was not right. This lady called me from the agency saying that, hey, we would like you to come in for an audition. And I was just so like, I said, no, I don't want, I'm not interested. I just hung up, you know, but that's where I was at. Right. I mean, all the opportunities, you know, I just closed all the doors because I just felt so defeated in so many ways. And this is the type of person I am. And, you know, I try not to give alcohol or other outside issues the power, because I don't know, I try to stay in the solution, you know, and I practice staying in the solution. Doesn't matter, even to this day. And it's been a very slow journey, but in my disease, we have a couple of dogs. Anyways, one of them was like a 11-year-old Pomeranian. His name is Mickey, and he's an old dog, right? So I'm like on like a 4-day run at home. He has diarrhea, right? And instead of me caring about this dog, I just threw him in the, I threw him in the garage and closed the door. He's barking. I turn on my music and it's like pretend I didn't hear him, right? So anyway, I think like the next day I wake up, I open the garage, and my dog is dead, you know. And I had to live with that, you know, even in sobriety. So. But that's the person I became, you know. My mom would like literally give me $5-$10, And I would like literally slam the door and kind of literally cuss at her underneath my breath. That's the ungrateful son I became. That's what drugs and alcohol did to me. So I lived like that for a while. And then 2009, I didn't get sober until 2011, right? So I'm trying to give you a little timeline. 2009, a really good friend of mine, he has a friend who's his dad. He owns some property, some land in the Amazon, and knows a few shamans. And he has taken this ayahuasca before. He says, Tang, this might be good for you, man. Because he knows how sick I was, right? He saw me. Basically, this guy saw me from just like a happy-go-lucky party on the weekend to like a daily user. And, you know, because this guy, when things were good, I bought a nice watch off him, right? And then a year or 2 years go by, I would literally drive 40 minutes, knock on his door at 3 o'clock in the morning, try to get $3,000-$4,000 for this watch. He saw all this, so he knows. But anyways, so 2009, he said, Tang, come on, let's take this trip, man. I'll front you this money. I'm going to take you, we're going to go to Amazon. So off I go to Ecuador, me and like eight other people, all his friends. We're going to do this ayahuasca. But before the ceremony, we had a chance to meet and greet with the shaman who was like, at that time, geez, he's like, supposedly he's like 104. God, he looks like he's probably in his 80s. But anyway, he was chain smoking Marlboros, you know, laughing, whatever. He didn't really speak no English. So it was a meet and greet where everybody shook his hand. But by the time he got to my hand, he touched me. He said, this man is going to have an exorcism. I guess because I had a lot of inner demons inside of me. I guess because during that time I did. So we went with the whole ayahuasca thing, you know, I took this this god-awful tasting tea. Oh, my God. And then like 20 minutes later, I vomited. Then I started seeing stuff. And then but during all this time, right, I was still thinking exorcism. So this one of his disciple, this guy kind of took me through this spiritual journey where I still remember this day. And I have all this on video to where me flopping away on the floor, just flopping, right, by myself for hours and hours. I imagine him taking me to deep down to all my fears and resentment with people, places, and things, mostly people, right? And make amends right there, right on the spot. And it was a long process. And towards the end, I felt like I was trapped in this maze. I want to get out. And I woke up literally the next day filled with bed bugs and stuff. But I felt a sense of relief, right? For some reason, I felt something happened. So I came back home. This is mind you, with no AA and stuff. I managed to stay sober for 6 months with no program. I mean, I was still at home, but I wasn't doing no drugs. I mean, I had access to all the stuff, the alcohol, but I wasn't drinking. I find that very fascinating, you know. So I'm not really vouching for the ayahuasca. I'm just saying this has been my experience. And mind you, looking back, right, I had two counts of DUIs. One was early on in my 20s where I wasn't ready, right? I did one AA meeting, then forged the rest. And then the second one where it was like a license suspension, the whole shebang, right? I got to do like 2 weeks in jail. I did all that, but I was still drinking and I was still driving without a license. But that's where it's at. So the ayahuasca experience, and then I relapsed off that, right? But by this time, though, I think something happened. I don't know. It's just maybe, you know, one thing about for sure, though, it's all perfect timing, you know? And I used to question that, but I truly believe now, especially with some little time and enough of, I don't know, like sober moments, you know, good, bad, or indifference, that is everything is perfect timing for all of us, right? I truly believe that. But anyway, so I've been trying to stay stopped for so long. I would keep on giving my mom. She would shake her head. And then 2010 rolls around. My mom would, I don't know, I could tell she's a little bit off. So one day she sat me down. She said, son, and I've never seen this look before. My mom is a very composed, very soft-spoken woman, right? Never cusses at me, never hit me, and she had this scared look in her eyes. That son, we're like, I think like 3-4 months behind rent. And I think she's got two different credit cards and loans here and there. I don't know how she did it, but she kept it afloat with only one income. She said, we're behind. I need your help. And by this time, literally, I was hopeless. I gave up on myself already because I kept on trying to stay stopped. I couldn't. I'm in debt like crazy to the world, you know, to my friends. Just, you know, I just like, how am I going to get out of this, right? But during this time, I still was talking to a couple of billiard friends. And one of them, who lives in Long Beach, he was renting out a room to this sober member, Art D. So he says, yeah, I'll have Art take you to an AA meeting, right? And then it's funny, too, because I want to get back to there are no coincidences and everything's so well-timed because my last hurrah, this is like right before my mom had this conversation with me, right? I was playing like small-time poker, right? And I think I took it from like $200. I built it up all the way to $3,000, right? And I forgot because at this casino that I play, well, back then a waiter would have 20 bags, $20 bags in this Splenda, Sweet and Low. So I'm playing poker, trying to win whatever small amount. And I would give some of my mom, keep some for my bankroll. And then this is like two months without no drink, no nothing. I went there and I saw the waiter and I had this thirst, right, for alcohol. And I had all my money with me, right, pretty much. And 36 hours later, I lost everything. I was drunk. I think for the first time in my life, and this is probably like 2 weeks before my mom's conversation, I cry, God, I can't do this anymore. Please help me, right? God, I said, oh, God, you know, whatever kind of God, but I sincerely, as God's my witness, that I sincerely asked for help and brought me to AA, right? Brought me to AA. I went to some meetings in Long Beach. Basically, still my home group today is a 7 a.m. Marine Pacifica, 7 a.m. attitude adjustment meeting. And I don't know, it was kind of awkward because I spent years and years waiting, right? Waiting for somebody to come knock on my door and rescue me from this bondage of, drug addiction, alcoholism, just a lot of reflection of the dark past, the money I used to have, the friends I used to have, all my mistakes. You know, when you have a lot of time and you're in our disease, in this disease, and you're by yourself with your mind, oh my God, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemies. But today I don't have any enemies, but that's a figure of speech, right? So when I came to this meeting and I heard the solution, I heard the laughter, so I don't know, it was pretty powerful, you know, and I went to a meeting every day. And after 3 months by doing AA, I had a reservation because it was like a Wednesday and there was a poker game that night. And I knew there was going to be drugs and alcohol there. And during this time, I didn't have no money anyways, but a friend said he would let me play since, you know, I haven't played in so long. And he would finance me to play that night. So I can't say no to that opportunity, right? So I went. I went there with not really intention of to really do anything, but deep down I did. But so here I am playing poker with my guys. They're smoking weed, doing their thing. I see a plate of cocaine. I'm looking at it, nothing. Anyways, 2 hours later, I took a drink. I did plenty of that. And then I went home, you know, with some stuff and a bottle of Jack. And then I started drinking, doing my thing. And then, but for the first time, I felt this guilt that I can't even explain to you. And I think people in the program that have come to know a little bit about AA and relapse kind of could relate what I'm sharing. You know, it's like I'm still new to the program, but yet I felt this guilt and shame that I've let my sponsor and my home group down. And mind you, before all this, right? I mean, I felt guilty for maybe like a week, but then my old behaviors, my old lifestyle would seep in and I would go party and do my dirty thing, right? Whatever I did. But for the first time, I felt this guilt and shame. And it was funny too, because I didn't come home late. It was early in the morning. My sponsor, he called me. He said, "What you doing?" I said, "I'm feeling good, Miles. You know, I'm partying." And then he said, "Oh." And then he called me back a little bit and said, "Yeah, I'm not feeling so good, Mom. I feel really guilty, ashamed, all this." And I'm like half crying to this man, right? He says, "It's okay, Tang. It's okay. Come back to the morning meeting and stand up as a newcomer." So I flushed down the stuff. I just fell asleep. I woke up, went to my 7 a.m. morning meeting, stood up as a newcomer, and I cried. God, I was just crying. I still remember so vividly. I cried, and I said some stuff that I don't remember. But for the first time, that honesty with the group felt so good after I did all that, right? And I sat down, and then I stood up as a newcomer for the 30 days. And then I went through the steps with my sponsor, the sponsor that called me. And the way he did the step was very unique. He kind of didn't really take me to the books, but kind of did like a different format. But he said, "Tang, you know, just let the steps work through me." And then, you know, and I did through the steps. But thank God, too, because during this time, I wasn't a big homework reading, you know, during this time, every time I pick up the big book, it was like a sleeping aid. I would fall asleep. I would try to read the big book, right? By myself, I would fall asleep and then try 12 and 12. But anyways, I managed to get a year, but that first year though was, wow, was, you know, I was very fortunate enough to belong to a Tuesday night big book study with a bunch of good men. It was a men's stag, right? A lot of good sobriety guys with 30, 40 years. And we would just talk, you know, they smoke cigars. I would listen. I don't know. And during this time, I didn't really have a job. So I had a chance to get down some phone numbers, mostly from older guys who were retired or who had time to talk to me. Right? I would call them and I would just talk to them. They would listen. I would talk, whatever. And did 2-3 meetings a day. And during this time, my mom still kept this LA Fitness membership. Right? That's the only thing I had left. And she kept it for some reason. I don't know why. It was like $50 a month. But she always, even in my disease, she never canceled this membership. So I did AA and worked out. Did more AA and then got my year. Second year, I got a girlfriend, got a get-well job, working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, $10 an hour, giving my mom $350 of that. So $250 was left for me. And I was still doing AA, you know, year three, year four. Same almost same pattern. And then year five was rough because my mom was diagnosed with cancer, right? But before all that, the house we lived in, my mom's boyfriend passed away, and I totally forgot. I missed this guy. One thing about me, I apologize, you know, because nothing is script. I just wing it. And so if I do skip it, I could always come back. But anyways, I met this, he's a brother of mine, different parents, of course, but ex-Marine, definitely one of us. And I met him playing poker. Anyways, this guy, this is how talented this guy was, right? His first 3 years playing poker out of the Marines, he became a millionaire with just self-studying and just through brute force, like, "I'm a Marine. You cannot beat me." I witnessed all this. He literally became like a world-class poker player due his whatever tenacity, right? And then he started drinking. You know, we started partying and stuff, but he didn't really socialize. He would just drink by himself, and he did outside issues too. Anyways, long story short, he would help me here and there because we were living in the same house, but he literally went through that money, same boat I did. And then during this time, you know, I was, you know, my first couple of years, I would try to hand him the big book. He said, "Man, I hate those AA people." I would hand him the big book. He wouldn't read it. And during this time, he didn't have a car because his car got repo, whatever. I said, hey, I'll take you somewhere if you go to an A meeting. He said, yeah, but he would not step his foot into the AA. You know, anyways, long story short, my fourth year in sobriety, he committed suicide, put a bullet in his head. And it's crazy, too. The place I live now is literally 100 yards from where he committed suicide. I could literally look out and see where he committed suicide, you know, and I still keep his bullets, you know, as a reminder with his ID, you know, that he was definitely one of us, you know, and in his alcoholism, you know, he drank himself. He was a daily drinker. He drank himself where, I forgot the name, but anyways, when your eyes are yellow, you know, his whole body face was yellow. I took him to the ER. 6 days later, he came out and he said, yeah, doctors told me if I ever drink again, I'm going to die. And my liver is only down to 20%. He stayed dry for 2 months. And then one day, I think after a meeting, I came home. I saw him with his drink. And, you know, my intuition says, oh, man, he's done for, right? And then, yeah, a couple of weeks later, he committed suicide. But anyways, I just want to share that. You know, I always want to share that story because, you know, one thing about alcoholism, you know, in my 12 years, it seems like the people that stay, do all the bullshit and just stay, do all and not drink and pick up, somehow they get relief and that are not too smart for the program. You know, where I've seen members that come in and they're very gifted in the outside world, right? Driving in their nice cars, whatever. Anyways, they come in with this, like, yeah, I got this. And they don't stay, you know. And I've seen guys, you know, with all the money in the world and have alcoholism and choose to die with it. And I've seen people come in with nothing and slowly, you know, do whatever they got through this AA journey process. They create a brand new, beautiful life that they never imagined was possible. And, you know, I am a miracle. I think we all are. I believe in working with others. You know, my whole journey is kind of funny because I always try to work with others, right? Doing panel speakers, whatever engagement, you know, always the hand of AA. But for some reason, I never had a chance to take somebody to do the steps until just recently. I was fortunate enough to take one man to the 12 step. You know, that was a blessing in itself. You know, I could talk so much about AA. One thing about the big book that I find very fascinating because I do a lot of big book study and it seems like every time I open up a page, even though I've read it like a couple of days ago or a couple of hours ago, it's a different part of the paragraphs hits me different kind of way depending on my emotional sobriety. It's kind of, I don't know why it does that. And I've hear other people share the same thing. You know, it's kind of magical. I am a firm believer. This is a we program, right? Like for me, up to myself to read the book by myself, I will fall asleep. But in a group setting, while other people are breaking down different kind of ideas and their experience, strength, and hope, I get to find the similarities and it works for me. So during COVID, it was a very difficult year for me. Very difficult year for me because with COVID, I don't know. I think I had time to just be at home, right, in my head. And I thought about the drink and the drug. And I had to literally grab a newcomer and take him through the steps, right? You know, my message is this. Usually I've been taught, like, when I'm talking, I'm usually telling my story kind of towards the newcomer, right? And I just hope that my stories maybe could shed a light on some dark, deep, like, situation where you think, like, you can't get out of because working with others, you know, I had a chance to go really deep through a spiritual advisor who's also my sponsor, and he's also a spiritual advisor, where I do meditation, some breath work. I had a chance to really connect with my five-year-old self and make peace with the Lil Tang, you know, who I call Lil Tang now. And I treat Lil Tang a little different, you know, because before I didn't understand Lil Tang. I didn't know who Lil Tang was protecting me all this time. But I don't know. It's I do believe in prayer. And my first year, I used the Serenity Prayer until it was God. I can't remember my mom going through stuff, right? I would say the Serenity Prayer. So due sobriety, I had a chance to take care of my dad too, who passed a couple of years ago, you know, through cancer. One thing's for sure, as I do this AA, I feel like I need AA more than ever, you know? And as of like maybe, I don't know, 18 months, I started doing a gratitude list, a daily gratitude list with two guys. And now it has blossomed to 20-something guys and a few girls. I share with a group from the Netherlands, Vegas group. And I don't know, it seems like that's how I met my sponsee. You know, I approached him with like, hey, let's do this gratitude. And instead of like me shaking him, hey, man, I need you to be your sponsor. I don't know. This is definitely a program of attraction. You know, I think we get to show up and just tell our story as honest as possible, and maybe, you know, it could maybe inspire other through the language of the heart. You know, I truly believe, you know, I owe AA for the rest of my life. You know, that's why I do AA, you know, because it's a practice. To me, everything's a practice, meditation, whatever it might be, right? Especially like nowadays, is like if I go a whole day without AA, I've noticed something slipping me where I'm a little bit antsy, a little bit irritated. My breaths become a little bit more shallow. I'm starting to develop a little bit like headaches and stuff. It's kind of weird, you know, where I come into a meeting, it's almost like my breath becomes very continuous, very slower as I listen to whatever the reading, tradition, step study, whatever it might be. Anyways, you know what? I hope that my message connects with some people out there. You know, I know AA and the steps and the people, right? The people. I don't know. I truly believe we are all godlike spirits, you know, and in AA we get to connect with other people's spirit, right? You know, and practice compassion, love, and tolerance instead of being in the status quo. You know, I love that part about AA, you know, and I'm forever grateful that I even found AA, because I know lots of, I wouldn't call them, they're like functioning alcoholic that are very successful, that know they're alcoholic, but yet they're so successful that they're going to go down with a drink, you know, because they get to, you know. So I don't know. It's thank God I went dead busted. Thank God. And, you know, it's just perfect, right? So I don't know, you know. Anyways, thank you for my life. Thank you for my sobriety. And that'll be it.
Thank you, Ting.
Thank you for allowing me to be of service today. Thank you very much.
You said something a few times about perfect timing and things working perfectly. And we rescheduled this a couple times. Do you feel like this was a good time in your life to go there and share your story here?
This is the perfect timing because, yeah, we did reschedule a few times due life schedule, bad timing. And it's so funny, too, because I am literally coming out of a 5-day back pain, right, where I hurt myself. So I was such in pain, right? But somehow do some meditation, some lots of AA meeting and some, I don't know, some other healthy lifestyle that I'm actually feeling a lot better today. And I'm even feeling better now after I'm done with this, right? This has been a lingering thing. Like, what am I going to say? You know, all the stuff that we kind of think about, you know, but I did meditate before this and I did do 2 AA meetings. So I was kind of well prepared to just let it flow. You know, and let my experience, strength, and hope just come out, right? However it comes out.
Yeah, it came out really well. Genuine, honest, It's very good. I have a couple more questions. You mentioned your father passing, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And you mentioned, but I don't know that you finished the story, your mom passed, and then, but you had mentioned her being diagnosed with cancer. I believe you were sober before she passed and you were able to be there for her.
Yes, I was on my fifth year of sobriety.
Okay, so I'm sorry you've lost both of your parents in sobriety, so they got a chance to see you doing this thing.
Yes, and you know what? I do know personally, if you remember, that both their parents lost it to, you know, in sobriety, lost both their parents to cancer, you know, so I got to hear their message early on in sobriety, so I was kind of somewhat prepared. I mean, you can never be fully prepared for everybody's grieving experience is different, right? Depending on how attached they are to their loved ones, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I'm a mama's boy, and I cry for years, literally a couple of years, literally.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
I'm sure she's very proud of you wherever she is.
Oh, she is. I talk to her every day. Every day I talk to my parents, good, bad, and indifference. Yeah, that's like my form of prayer, you know, talk to my parents.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
I joke that my mom and I fight way less now that she's passed. You mentioned recently sponsoring someone, taking a newcomer through the steps. And I think you said that you had a spiritual experience or some significant thing happen. For the newcomer that's listening, what happened, what changed by sponsoring someone?
Well, you know, due my years of failure trying to take someone through the steps, right? Because I was willing, but yet they weren't willing, whatever, you know. Yeah. That I felt, and I heard all the stories about how other members took in other members through the steps, and they felt this uplifting, you know, I don't know, it's just like, you know, whatever it might be, I was missing that, and I was craving that. So here I am, had a chance to take somebody through the steps. So it was very powerful for that individual and for myself. But obviously, it was very short-lived, right? Because I can't just live off that and not do AA anymore, right? I mean, I think it lasted for like 2 days, but then, you know, it's obviously, that's why it's a daily reprieve, right? I do AA every day, you know, every day. You know, one form or another. Anyways, yeah.
How do you do AA every day?
Well, it's a good question. I start out in the morning when I wake up by usually trying to connect with my breath for a couple moments by doing some stretching exercises, some Tai Chi movements, just to get my blood circulating, you know, moving around, flowing. And then I would maybe take some deep breath, you know, quiet moment a little bit. And then I would send out my gratitude list, you know, that I mentioned, which is a daily thing. Rain, shine, Tang's feeling good, bad, indifferent, Tang's tired, does not matter. Just like meditating to me, right? Before, you know, I would meditate and I would like, oh my God, the noises. Oh, this is, you know, I'm not feeling at peace. I'm so batshit crazy. I would stop after 2 minutes. Now I just do it. It's a practice. So I show up and I listen as best as I can, you know, Zoom via live meeting, calling other alcoholics, you know, whatever it might be, or just sometime reading their gratitude list and chime in, you know, oh yeah, congratulations. Saw you go and do this, whatever it might be. And just sending, you know, that's, I don't know. And that's how I do AA. Call my sponsor, you know, and, you know, I'm calling him every day, but he's a busy man, but I call other alcoholics, you know, definitely talk to another alcoholic at least once or twice a day, depending on, who I talk to. But usually I talk to older men because I do have a few female AA friends, but I don't have many because I don't know. I just never had the opportunity, you know, to, meet them or whatever, but yeah. That's how I do AA.
Nice.
I just do it. Yeah, regardless of whatever. I just do AA and because I'm responsible, right? That's how I pay back my debt to AA is by showing up because we get to lead by example.
Yeah. Is there anything that you're thinking of now or that you left out that you would like to share?
Wow. Come to think about it, probably a lot, you know. yeah, you know, do... I don't know. Looking back, there are no coincidences that one thing's for sure, though. Lately, I've been very mindful to go within instead of seeking without. You know, I practice detachment from material, especially in the material world, from the ego world, right? From the myself center world. And that is so freaking hard that it's in my forefront, you know, but it's like I said, it's a practice. So, but it seems like, I don't know, I'm 51, you know, I'm about to embark on this brand new journey in my life, you know. I could talk about it on and on, but I have a lot of hope for the future, you know, and for my, I have hope that I could maybe participate in other departments to give back to AA, you know, like, for example, I've never once had a AA commitment in my 12 years, you know, shame on me. But, you know, for a while there, I was very shameful of that, right? But yet I do service work in different forms, you know, so I'm kind of made peace with that, because when you start shining the flashlight on yourself, you know, and you start nitpicking yourself, that does not serve one. So, but anyways, you know, I probably left out a lot of parts, but I don't know. It's I love AA with all my heart, with all my heart. I think if I had to go a grading, it would be, number one would be my mom. Number two would be AA. Number three would be myself. Number four would be my dad. And then obviously the list goes down, right? But that would be my list. So AA is right behind my mom. That's not a bad place, you know?
No. And yeah. Your sobriety birthday is mom's birthday. So
yeah. And how you make that up? I mean, I'm a son that never remember her birthday. I think we share like three birthday parties with her in my 40 years, right? Hanging out with her, right? Before I got sober. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, I truly believe that this Zoom thing, you know, and thank you for your service, by the way. I think with COVID, there are no accidents, right? No coincidence that AA was struggling. We created Zoom, and this Zoom has God blossomed to God. I'm just endless, you know, I'm just endless with what Zoom is doing for people in rural areas where they can't drive 80 miles each way to get to a live meeting. Right. Mm-hmm. But yet they could log on and do AA. And I hear that so many shares from so many different members from all apart of the United States where Zoom has been a game changer. Right. Mm-hmm. So lately I've been trying to balance live with Zoom, but obviously Zoom is much easier. Also, the live meeting do need participant, right, to show up. Everybody was thinking like me, there would be zero people in the meeting. So I'm forever grateful Zoom has arrived and it's here to stay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if Zoom's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know, we alcoholics, I think once we get sober and we start unpeeling our own onion, I think we have a special gift, not just to connect with drug addicts and alcoholics, but I think we have special talent. They think outside the box. They're just so creative. Now we get to practice this creative, God-given energy, right? That we are sober members of alcoholics. We could do great things with the world, you know? That's just my 2 cents. You know, I could be dead wrong. Who knows?
I think there is a tenacity among alcoholics in general. When we want something, you better get out of the way.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the things we went through to get the drink on or the drug on, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, now we take that and, you know, and put it to good use. We mm-hmm. can go far. I mean, sky's the limit. And I see this. I see this in other members, how they share about their journey, right? And I believe them. Yeah. It's not about the car they drive, the house they live. It's just, you know, we come to know peace, right?
Yeah.
So that's why, I don't know, I don't think I mentioned peace so much, but I think the people that come to know peace through working the program, ever how they work it, come to know peace, they protect that peace with their dear life through protecting their boundaries, whatever it might be, it looks like, right? Everybody's different. But I protect my peace. That's why, like, I could only take so much of drama and toxicity before I got detached with love, right? And that's where Al-Anon comes in. You know, I don't want to talk too much about Al-Anon, but I love their teaching. So anyways, I love all 12-step program. Yeah.
I have one final question for you. For the alcoholic suffering, listening to this message, what final thoughts would you like to leave them with?
Wow. I hope that they come to AA, either Zoom meetings, live, make some friends, get some phone numbers, and start connecting, right? I think start building this chain. So when instead of being isolated with the disease, they have a solution to just talk with another alcoholic who's willing to listen. And I think the key is to be rigorously honest, right, with your sponsor, with whoever you're sharing your story with, and start spot checking your bullshit, you know, because even early in my sobriety, I was still so full of shit, right? That now I'm not saying I'm pure as driven snow, but I'm more mindful of what I say and what I do out there because I know it has an impact on my energy. So if you're struggling and stuff, I would just give AA a chance.
For more information, read the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or visit keepcomingback.net.